Napa know-how.
There are lots of amazing cars on the road, but perhaps none more amazing than the paid-off car. It may not be pretty, but the price is right. Heck, if you keep that thing running, it'll actually start paying you. Because with Napa Rewards, for every $100 you spend, you'll get $5 off. So keep your car running longer, stronger with Napa Rewards and watch the savings start rolling in. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network and Fear the Sword SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Fear the Sword and the Step Back. Today, it's a Monday. That means it's a mailbag Monday, answering a bunch of your questions as we do each Monday. Again, if you want to submit them for next week's show, you can do that by dropping them to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com or to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter or on our Facebook page. You can find @LockedOnCavs on the Cavs Reddit page or anywhere you can reach me. You can ask me mailbag questions, and there's a pretty good chance I'm going to find them and answer them on the show. So before we get into the mailbag questions, I do want to look at this last weekend of Cavs games. They did play two games over the weekend. A game against the Hawks on Friday, and a game against the Miami Heat on Saturday. On Friday, the Cavs set a new NBA record, surpassing the Houston Rockets' NBA record of 24 threes by hitting 25 threes against the Atlanta Hawks in a 135-130 win. In the first half, the Cavs were absolutely great, just destroyed the Hawks seemingly in every way. Kyle Korver also got a really nice tribute during the first half, but this game kind of got out of hand a little bit in the second half. This game was a lot closer than I think it should have been. The Cavs should have been able to get people rest in the second half of this game. I don't think that was quite ideal. The Cavaliers functionally should not have needed everything that they had in this game. If you look at just the talent difference, you look at how well Kyrie and LeBron played in the first half. LeBron playing 39 minutes this game is a bit crazy. Kyrie playing 36 in this game is a bit crazy, but tip of the hat to those guys. Kyrie had 43-9 in this game, 10-10 from the line, 4 steals as well. Just a very dominant game for him from that point guard position. And LeBron James, 38 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists for him against just 2 steals, hit 6 of 10 from 3. A really, really good game for LeBron James, and a good win for the Cavs. A win is a win. Really won this game in the second quarter, and they overcame Atlanta, outscoring them 42-29 in the fourth to win that game on Friday and improve again in the East and just pick up another win against an East playoff team. But on Saturday, LeBron and Kyrie rested, and something predictable happened. The Cleveland Cavaliers lost to the Miami Heat. This was not an enjoyable game. This was not a game that matters in the grand scheme of things, because the Cavs didn't have their two best players who are healthy, and Kevin Love is still out, and J.R. Smith is out, etc., etc. The Cavs in this game started a pretty wonky lineup. If you take a look at that lineup, you will probably never see Amon Shumpert, Kyle Korver, James Jones, Derek Williams, and Tristan Thompson all play together as a starting lineup ever again, at least this season. I'm not even sure or Deron Williams, not Derek Williams. Excuse me, I got my D Williams is confused. I'm not even sure that because Deron Williams has only been here for a few games and been in Cleveland for a few games, rather. I'm not even sure what that lineup has played together. I don't think it has based on my checking, but not a good game. Channing Frye was really, really good in this game. He did hit 3 of his 5 threes, was 9 of 12 from the field for a team-high 21 points, but not at all a good game. And you saw the Cavs' two best players get arrested. There was that incident, as I'm sure you saw on TV, and from Dave McMenamin's report about Magruder for the Heat fouling Channing Frye hard, and J.R. Smith not really taking it well. And then there's the incident of him yelling, and then Deion Waiters yelling at the bench, and all this different stuff. So that didn't end well. But the Cavs, it's a loss. It doesn't matter quite that much. And they if they do want to really get revenge with their full squad of who's healthy, they're going to have a chance on Monday to do so. As the Cavs enter the week, they are 3 games up on the Boston Celtics in the Eastern Conference, thanks to Tyler Ulis hitting a game winner on Sunday to keep Boston from getting within 2 games. So Cavs fans out there should be thanking Tyler Ulis for that. 5 games up on Washington, 6 up on Toronto, 8.5 up on Atlanta. And if you look at the overall picture, the Cavs are sort of a bit behind in the best record in the NBA pace right now. They're 42-19. The Warriors are 51-11. The Spurs are 48-13. And the Rockets are 44-19. So it looks like if the Cavs do make the finals, as we all expect, it is going to be another situation where they don't have home court advantage in the finals. But they're probably going to have home court in the East, and I would expect them to do so. This week, we do have another jam-packed Monday through Friday week of Locked On Cavaliers. On Tuesday, we will be recapping the Cavs Heat game and looking at Andrew Bogut's debut. I expect him to be available to the media before the game, unless he's available to shoot around. We'll see about that. We'll have some audio from Andrew Bogut. And then on Wednesday, we'll be talking about the Cavs playoff rotation with Greg Schwartz of Bleacher Report, who covers the Cavs for Bleacher Report, so that'll be pretty great. On Thursday, preview Cavs Pistons, and Trevor Magnotti will be on the show to talk about the Cavs development and Kay Felder's time in Canton. And then on Friday we will look ahead at the weekend, as we always do. One note about Kay Felder: he had a 41 point game for the Charge last week, and on Sunday against the Westchester Knicks, he had a 26 point 10 assist game for the Canton Charge in a win against the Westchester Knicks. I do think Kay Felder could play all 3 games with the Charge this week. I tweeted a little tweet somewhere about this, if you want to check that out. But in the Charge of 10 games left, I do think it would make a lot of sense for Kay Felder to spend 10 games in Canton and to just play there. He's not going to play with the team. They've already shown this past weekend that they're going to have him play, perhaps play in the D League as opposed to playing with the team when they're on the road, because he can actually play there. And I think right now, when you see him going on and drop, having a 26-10 game and having some really nice drives and dishes, and the game looks at his speed, and he looks maybe above that speed, and he is this really fast guy, I think you are seeing him in this situation, in this weird gap between being an NBA caliber player and being too good for the D League. You see the speed, you see the baseline level of vision, and you see these other useful skills in games, and he's actually getting to play. I do think there's a question of how well some of this translates, because some of what he's going to do there isn't what he's going to do with the Cavs. I said this on the show before, but I would say in a vacuum, it is better for him to play than to sit, especially since the Cavs are not a team that practices a lot. So we'll see what the future holds there. I'd expect him to play a lot in Canton, and I think it makes quite a bit of sense for him to do so. I'm not sure if he will be with the team on Monday. I think he probably will, because the Chargers don't have a game, so expect him to be potentially available on Monday for Andrew Bogut's debut. But I expect a lot of Kay Felder in Canton, where he wears number 3 instead of number 20, instead of him playing with the team currently. So he just doesn't have their role. Deron Williams is there, etc., etc. Before we get into today's show, into your mailbag questions, deep into the show, I want to let you know that today's podcast is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek, as always, is the best way for you to buy and sell tickets right on your phone. You can download it on any smartphone, whether you're an Android user or an iOS user, and you can find any ticket you want to a game, a concert, to an art, to whatever you want to go see. You can find it on SeatGeek. They're going to grade all the deals based on the best possible deals from all the ticket sites. You know you're getting the best deal. If it's green, it's good. If it's red, it's bad. And you're going to get to see the view from your seat right in the app. So there's not going to be any confusion about what kind of seat you're exactly getting when you buy the ticket right in the app. I've used SeatGeek before. I used it to get rap tickets for Migos and for Run the Jewels. I've used it to get Cavs tickets before. My uncle was in town and wanted to see LeBron play Dirk. And I'm going to use it anytime I need tickets. SeatGeek is my first choice, and there's no other place I would go to get tickets. And today, you, the listener of Locked On Cavaliers, this Cleveland Cavaliers podcast, can save $20 on your first SeatGeek purchase by using the promo code LOCAVS. That's LOCAVS. You can save $20 on your first SeatGeek purchase by entering that promo code under the settings tab, and you'll get a $20 mail-in rebate courtesy of our friends over at SeatGeek. So again, use that promo code LOCAVS, save $20 on the first purchase, and use SeatGeek today to go see the game, the concert, whatever it is you want to see, use SeatGeek to do so. All right, so now we'll get into your mailbag questions. Again, not to beat the dead horse, but you can drop those to LockedOnCavs@gmail.com or to @LockedOnCavs on Twitter, on Reddit, on the post I put up on the Reddit page, to the Facebook page we have up at LockedOnCavs, or even to me on Twitter at CWMWrites. The first question this week comes from a frequent question giver, James Watson at JimRun85 on Twitter. He asks, is it true the Cavs will probably have to use their mid-level exception next year to sign Chetty Osman? So the short answer to this is no. Chetty Osman, if you don't know his history, was a second-round pick in the 2015 NBA draft. He was actually selected by the Minnesota Timberwolves because they actually had the pick 31st overall. His draft rights, along with those of Rakeem Christmas and a future pick, were then traded to the Cavs in exchange for the draft rights to Tyus Jones, who now is a backup point guard on the Wolves. So I don't think he is applicable to some of the draft rules. I think a lot of the draft rules that we know of apply to the first round picks who can get tied into the 3-year role and be in the rookie scale. So this is the thing. Second round picks are not subject to the salary scale. So you have buyouts and stuff like that, but I do think his contract is up, if I'm not mistaken. The Cavs could offer him a higher salary. That could go towards a buyout if he had to do that. But I don't really think he's going to be able to go after the mid-level exception. Because the Cavs hold his rights and they haven't traded them yet, and they certainly could on draft night, they certainly could in July, he would have to ask for something that is definitely above his market value. This is pretty much speculation, but Chetty is 21. He's born in 1995. This is a very young guy. He'll be 22 at the start of next season. He's not really in a position, I don't think, to really leverage himself in asking for that much money. The Cavs are going to probably offer him what would be maybe a slightly higher than a second-round pick. I don't necessarily think he's going to get the full mid-level exception. The mid-level exception is a pretty significant amount of money. And under the new CBA, its value is going to go up by 45%. So I don't think he is really going to be able to ask for that. The Cavs would be sort of crazy to give him that. They don't have the flexibility to really give a guy like that much money. I think if he does come over as we expect and as he says he wants, he's going to probably have to get a second round type contract. He's 22 years old. This isn't a guy who is going to be, it doesn't have a proven track record of being in a very high level European player. It's not like he is playing, you know, on Barcelona or one of these other great teams. Like, he's playing in Turkey. And he's playing well, and he's doing a bunch of stuff well, but it's not like he is playing at this incredibly high level in Europe, and he doesn't have a decade of producing or 7 years of producing. like you've had at the season other prospects have. I think you can. He can. He's probably going to have to ask for a lower amount of money from whatever team he ends up on, and the mid-level exception is just not something the Cavs or frankly any team should really be willing to give him. That's just my opinion. But I just can't see a situation where Chetty comes over next year and is getting paid the mid-level exception. That just seems a bit crazy to me. There's no way he, even if he's getting more than the minimum, I don't think there's a chance in hell, excuse my language, that he is going to get something like that. Next question comes from email me at Douglas Philip Yee. He's asked, does this new roster make the Cavs better than the Warriors, or is it just a nice insurance policy? So the Kevin Durant injury, I think, certainly impacts this. But I do think the Cavs are deeper than Golden State. Now, I think Golden State's depth issues maybe are a little bit overstated now that Durant's out, because I do think it looks optically bad just because they're missing a lot of guys from last year. But I do think they actually did a really nice job filling out that roster. With the Cavs, I do think they're, again, deeper 1 through 12. I think they have a lot of depth at shooting guard. They have a lot of wings they can throw out there. I don't necessarily if I qualified as an insurance policy, and I don't think this necessarily makes the Cavs better than the Warriors, but maybe it's sort of a bridge of the two. I think they're, again, deeper. I think the Cavs' additions are going to help them more than Matt Barnes is going to help Golden State. And I do think these guys probably are some kind of insurance policy, but Cavs' biggest additions are just going to be getting healthy. It's the same thing for Golden State as well. So I don't know if it's really either of these things. If you're presenting as this either-or dynamic, I don't think it's necessarily one or the other of those. I think Deron Williams is a good insurance policy for Kyrie. I don't think Derek Williams really is an insurance policy. I think he's a potentially useful player. Bogut is definitely some kind of an insurance policy. I don't really think they necessarily make the Cavs better than the Warriors. And then that just insurance policy. I think they're there to bolster what is already there and give the Cavs a better chance of beating Golden State in the finals. And I think that's what they did. And I think that's sort of the whole point of it, is my way of answering that. So, next question comes from Joe_Cavs. He tweeted and asked, what is going on with Shumpert? Who do you envision being in the Cavs' 9-man rotation against the Golden State Warriors in the playoffs? Shumpert, I think I wrote about this. If you're the sword, you can go look up my piece about this, about his shooting. I think he's shooting more than he really ever has, and his numbers have gone significantly down. He was shooting great in the beginning of the year. He was having some of the best shooting numbers of his career at that point, and then he sort of fell off. He sort of came way back down to earth, and he's fallen significantly down. This is a guy who I think, again, is a bit overrated on defense. RPM doesn't view him as this big negative, but he's not exactly a stand-up player or anything like that. I don't think he is this elite defender that I think some people would make him out to be. And I think Shumpert has just sort of kind of just come back down the other way. I think part of it is that the Cavs have put him in a situation where they've asked him to fill in for J.R. Smith, and that's just not what Shump is. That's not what J.R. Smith is just a different player than Amon Shumpert. Amon Shumpert is a more of a 3-and-D guy in a vacuum than you'd think Shumpert to be. Anything Smith to me, excuse me, and Smith's just a better shooter. Shumpert's 3-point percentage is still up at 38% right now. It was at 29.5 last year, so he has improved, in that sense. But if you just, again, look at that piece and some of the numbers have changed, he's shooting more and more by each month, and I think he just hasn't really struggled with that. He is not built to be that type of player. The Cavs have asked him to do a lot. He's filled in well in certain ways, but I don't think he is really built to play in that full sense. So that's an issue. My 9-man rotation, I haven't thought about this a ton yet, so we're gonna get into this more on Tuesday. But so this is kind of how I would view it as of right now. Obviously, you're gonna have Kyrie, J.R. Smith, LeBron, Kevin Love, and Tristan Thompson. I would have Korver in ahead of Amon Shumpert because of his shooting, and I think he's good enough on defense to make it work against guys like Iguodala and Ian Clark and whatnot. I think you're certainly going to play Channing Frye because I think his spacing is more valuable to you than Bogut, although I think Bogut could play. I do think you're going to see some Deron Williams. I think you're going to see some of him with LeBron, especially if that works really well over the end of the year. And I think you're going to see Richard Jefferson a lot as well, obviously. I think Richard Jefferson is essential in that series. His ability to switch, his ability to play both the 3 and the 4 and guard 2s, I think is really essential. I don't necessarily think 9-man is even realistic. I think you could see up to 11 guys playing. I think Shumpert is probably going to get booted all the way out unless he just doesn't shoot well. I think you could see maybe what happened to Delly last year happens to Shump in the finals, but I think you could see the Cavs legit go 10 guys deep against Golden State, and I think you could see Derek Williams in there for sprinkles as well. And, you know, things could happen. I mean, DeAndre Liggins could be this year's Dante Jones. We don't really know yet, but I think my main guys would be the starters, assuming it's JR and Kevin Love. Then I'll go Channing, Korver, Richard Jefferson, and Deron Williams. I think those would be my main nine with Shumpert still playing. That's how I look at it now. And of course, JR's injury and Kevin Love's health could really impact that. And I think I could see an envisioned situation where Lou elects to trust in Shumpert's defense in a vacuum and trust in Andrew Bogut. Although I think I would certainly go the other way. I think the shooting of Channing Frye and Kyle Korver in particular is just so insanely valuable when you have a guy like LeBron and you can space out Golden State in different ways. The last question this week comes again from Douglas Philip Yee. He says, what are the chances that Derek Williams re-signs after the season ends? I can't picture him signing somewhere else unless the Cavs can't afford him. So I've been asked this before. I think I've addressed this on the show before. My thing with him is, I don't know, if you're looking at other teams, I don't know what other teams are particularly, would be particularly interested in him. I don't 100% know what how the Cavs are going to view this summer. I mean, if they get swept in the finals, you know, I mean, they could just blow it all up, and then Derek Williams sort of, I mean, he's a peripheral piece, you know. The tricky thing, I think, is you have to just kind of know that what he is going to be limited. I think you've seen him struggle in certain stuff. I think he's probably not going to get bid on by other teams because I think he's invested. But I do think there is something to the idea that he is trying to rehabilitate his image a little bit with the Cavs, and I think he's done that. But I can't envision a team wanting to lock him up through a multi-year deal. Some team might buy into it. Some team might take that chance on him. But I could see him sticking around with Cleveland, and let's say like a Jordan McRae type deal where he's getting the minimum or slightly above it, and the second year's not guaranteed, or the Cavs have it guaranteed in the contract. I can't see a team, any NBA team really, considering this is his fifth team, that he has a well documented list of good and bad on his resume. I can't see a team really looking at this stretch he's had with the Cavs and being like, oh, we're going to get the same thing out of him. I just think there's very few teams that can leverage him in the same way, and I think no smart team is really going to have a big need for him. I could see a good team, like the Clippers maybe, but they don't have much of him either. I think the teams that should be interested in him are better teams that can leverage him, like Cleveland has. And I do think he wants to stay, and maybe it'll be a multi-year thing. We don't know that for sure. And I should just say to wrap this up that a lot depends on how he performs between now and April 12th, which is when the regular season ends, and then how he performs in the playoffs. If he is bad the rest of the way from Monday on, or just a longer stretch, and doesn't make an impact in the playoffs, there's a good chance the Cavs just don't see a need to bring him back. He has filled in really nicely for them. I think they like what he brings quite a bit, but I don't think his future is written yet. I know everyone's very excited about him, and I know he's a fun player. I know being at games, you see how the crowd responds when this guy dunks. You see just how I think people on Twitter get very excited about him, and it's telling that the Cavs have really bring them back there. And he had the tweets of just trying to earn my respect back. This is a guy who I think is trying to rehabilitate himself, and he probably has his mind on doing something more, but 10 games for him is not enough to, I think, justify a 2-year deal or something like that. We'll see. We will see how things go in the summer. We will see how he plays in the playoffs. But right now, I wouldn't jump the gun on that just yet. So that's going to be it for today's show. Again, thank you everyone who submitted questions for this week. Please, again, drop them for next week's show at lockedoncavs@gmail.com. To at Locked On Cavs on Twitter, or to me at CWMRates, or to our Facebook page, or wherever you can find me, drop me those mailbag questions, and I will do my best to find them and answer them on next week's show. Thanks again to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. They're always a great sponsor of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. Make sure you use that promo code LOCAVS and save $20 on your first purchase. We'll be back tomorrow for Andrew Bogut's debut, the Deion Waiters homecoming game after he yelled at J.R. Smith on Saturday. It's going to be a fun night in Cleveland. So have a great Monday. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Enjoy this episode. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.